believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in New York City and earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in political science and broadcast journalism from Syracuse University. He joined ESPN in 1991 as a SportsCenter anchor and has hosted ABC's golf coverage for many years, and it's host of many, many NBA telecasts. He's also the play-by-play announcer for Monday Night Football. His name, Mike Tirico. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's Jack.
We're with the voice of Monday Night Football, our own Mike Tirico. Mike, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Jack, it is nice to finally be able to get our schedules on the same page and do this. It's great to visit with you. I enjoy listening to the show when I can.
Thank you. Can you talk about your childhood and your parents in New York City?
Oh, sure, I can. I grew up in Queens, New York, just a few minutes away from Shea Stadium. For the people who are somewhat familiar with New York, they know, but they don't. It's one of the five boroughs. It's about 12 or 15 miles from the center of Manhattan, but it can take you an hour and a half to get those 12 or 15 miles, which is some of the maddening aspects of New York. So I grew up just outside of New York City. And I guess, Jack, what for the people around here would best be described as some of the old areas in Dearborn, if you will. It's a little bit city feel, but it's still, you're not amongst the big tall buildings. And it was enjoyable. My mom raised me as a single mom, and she did a great job. I have been raised by two great women. My grandmother is no longer with us. She passed about 6 years or so ago. And my mom and my grandfather and my mom's brother were very instrumental in my life growing up. But the two people who day to day raised me, certainly my mom and my grandmother. And I was absolutely thankful for them doing that.
What's the biggest things your mom taught you?
Oh, gosh. Hard work. My mom, in addition to raising me, worked full time, and she took a secretarial school education, essentially. All the way through to the point where she was running in charge of multi-million dollar accounts, personal accounts for business executives in New York, working for Chase Manhattan Bank, which we now know as Chase nationally, but it was more of a New York bank at that time. And she worked her way up through being a teller to running all the tellers and all the people on the floor in the Grand Central Station branch of Chase Manhattan Bank. So if you know New York City, you know Grand Central Station can be busy. It was a pretty big bank. And my mom was a hard worker, and her work ethic kind of spilled over, I think, on me. I remember days, Jack, that my mom would have the big accounts that she had, and they just kind of dump on her desk. Hey, can you balance my checkbook? And remember, these are the days before Excel files and online banking and all those fun things. And I remember many a night sitting up with my mom trying to help people find their dollars and cents and where they made their adding mistakes in their bank accounts. And those are some of the memories I have. But mom would always bring a bag of work home and work late and work often and up late and up early, and never sacrificed my well-being and my upbringing for what she was doing professionally, and succeeded at both. And I'll never be able to repay her for that.
Mike, what sports did you play as a kid, and how good were you?
Oh, well, I think like a lot of kids, although, you know, Jack, I'll answer the question, then I'll give you just a little observation. I played not really organized football, but football for fun, but basketball and baseball was the sport I played organized the most and really enjoyed that a lot. I was okay at best. I think I was a much more student of the game than a superstar in training. And I guess, Jack, when I realized when I tried out for my high school baseball team that my goal at that point was, or my purpose at that point, was to be the defensive replacement and the pinch runner, If that happens in high school, I don't think the major league career is soon to follow. So I think I realized that I better find this outlet that I had always hoped to be involved with journalism as my way through sports. You know, it's funny you asked that, Jack, about what organized sports I played, because I didn't play on high school teams and things like that. I see kids all the time now, and they're in organized sports at such an early age. You know, you're organized with soccer and travel soccer. Those are two words that I know make every parent just pull their shoulders closer to their neck. Travel soccer. It's just, it's become such a part of our culture now with our kids in sports. And it's great that it's organized because we know the people who are involved and backgrounds are kind of understood, and you know who's coaching them and where your kids are. But you know, I remember the old days when you'd get on your bike and go to the field and you'd tell your buddies at school, hey, we're going to meet at 4, bring your glove and somebody bring a bat and bring a couple of baseballs. And you'd have a pickup game of baseball or a pickup game of basketball. That doesn't happen much anymore. And I think that's part of our problem. Sports has become too much of a business and too much of a planned activity. And for the kids, it's almost like you have to pigeonhole them into their favorite sport now, before you can say, just go out and have fun. And I think we're losing a little bit of the joy of sports for kids, as far as I'm concerned.
I have a younger brother, Jim Crisula, on CBS Radio.
Does Market Watch, right?
Yes.
Yes, I know the name. I didn't realize you guys were brothers.
Yes. He's the successful one.
Baloney, but go ahead.
When he was a young kid, he would sit on the park bench and he would announce our games, the pickup games, okay? Were you like that as a kid?
A little bit. Definitely games on TV. I would turn down the sound and pretend to be the announcer. And I hope kids don't do that anymore because I don't want them to take my job. I don't want them turning down me for their practice. But, yeah, I did. You know, growing up in New York, Marv Albert was a very famous sportscaster, and he was the broadcaster for the New York Knicks and the New York Rangers and also did sports on the local TV station on Channel 4 in New York, which was the NBC station like it is here in Detroit. And I would enjoy watching Marv's career, and that really inspired me to realize that you always have to be prepared. You know, there's never too many events to do, and Marv was good at everything. You could see him on boxing one day and baseball studio hosting the next day, and then the NBA and the NHL and doing a sportscast on TV. And I've always tried to pride myself on the opportunity to be versatile and the opportunity to be able to do anything in sports on TV or radio. And that's a big reason. So did I pretend to be a sportscaster as a kid? Yes. Did I think it would actually happen? Absolutely not.
We're talking to Mike Tirico. When we come back, we'll ask him how it was he ever got hired by ESPN in 1991. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
Welcome back. We're with Mike Tirico, who joined ESPN in 1991 as a Sports Center anchor. Mike, how did that ever happen?
Oh, it's a long story. I will try to get to the headline details of it. We were in college. And I was a junior at Syracuse University, which I always wanted to go to Syracuse because I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. Many sports broadcasters, Marv Albert, I mentioned earlier, Bob Costas, Dick Stockton, and for the folks who remember a generation ago, Marty Glickman was one of the great early announcers, and he was an announcer in New York. They were all Syracuse alums. So I wanted to go to Syracuse and was lucky enough to be able to get to go there. Well, I'm a junior in college, and I'm interning at the local TV station, helping produce the show, not on the air, but I'm on college radio in Syracuse on the campus. And our campus station, because of the people who had worked there, like the people I mentioned before, and Dick Stockton, I mentioned earlier, Ted Koppel from Nightline, Steve Croft from 60 Minutes, Dick Clark, American Bandstand fame. That's just a number of the people. There are a ton of people who have been through those doors. So that was our experience. So I'm on the air there. People know that I'm halfway decent. I'm probably in a group of about five or six of us on the air at that time who will be the next group to go out into the real world and get jobs after college. So one day, our local TV station where I'm working as an intern has lost a couple of weekend sportscasters in a row, and they want to hire somebody young and cheap. Well, that dovetails with the second part of the story. Larry King writes a column in USA Today. He used to on Mondays, and in his column, he wrote dot, 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 Next time I need to hire a broadcaster, I'm going to call Syracuse and tell them to send me the next one that's ready. We loved it. We all hung on to it. We figure we'll put this on our resume. It'll help us get hired. We go down to Washington, D.C. to cover a basketball game, Syracuse and Georgetown. We ask Larry if we can come to the show, his producers. They say yes. We watch Larry do the show. He has us on the last hour. It gets played up in the media in Syracuse. All at the time that the TV station I intern at is looking for somebody to put on the air. And they said, you know what? Why don't we give you a four-week tryout? So I got a four-week tryout in April of 87. I think I was terrible. Somehow they saw something through my awful ability to say maybe he'll have a chance down the line. That's how I got hired. Worked there for 4 years. And then by sending a tape to ESPN, they said, send us one in a year and we'll see if you're ready. We think you're okay. I sent them one 9 months later and got hired and been there ever since, 17 years.
Your life is an American dream story. How did it happen?
It's kind of scary to think of it that way. You know, I don't know. I think Jack, part of it, and I always like to downplay what we do. I think we're very lucky with what we do. I think people would watch the Super Bowl if it was, let's put in the booth me and you and let's put Paul W. from the mornings. Let's just put the three of us in the booth and no
X player. We got to have Beckman. We got to have Beckman, right?
I know, but you know, if I said Beckman, then they'll think there's a real announcer there, so it'll ruin the point. Okay. we'll put Frank there. We'll put Frank, Paul W., and you. How about that? We'll put the three of you in the booth. You know what? If you guys are broadcasting Super Bowl 42 this year, it's not going to change one person in terms of the ratings. So I think our job is overemphasized for a variety of reasons. We may have the darling job of the sports media, and if you're in the media, you're not covering life and death, you're not covering the economy, home foreclosures, the mortgage bank crisis that we're going through and all that stuff. You're just kind of covering games and grown-up kids who get paid a lot of money and people who go to watch it. So I kind of laugh at the importance that people put on our job. But the dream is one that I had growing up, and I am lucky to live it out. I think because people gave me an opportunity and didn't doubt me. From family to friends to coworkers at ESPN, I've always been given the opportunity to work hard and earn an opportunity to get a different assignment or a new assignment or the next assignment. And I really hold that in high regard and probably – if you ask me why I've been able to live out the dream, there have been people along the way in my family who've sacrificed to give me the opportunity to do it, and people I've worked for who have said, you know what, we trust your hard work will get you through this, even though you're not the golden throat, great voice guy or the TV good looks, handsome, pretty boy with the perfect hair and perfect-looking TV face. That's okay. We still think you can do it. So probably at the end of the day, it's hard work, a little bit of luck, and earning the trust of people.
A couple of weeks ago, this is a true story, four of us were having lunch, and somebody said, if you could be anybody, who would you be? And one guy said a pro golfer, another one said an astronaut, another one said NASCAR driver, and the fourth one said, I want to be like that Mike Tirico guy. So he gets to meet all the famous.
That guy, he can come live this life for a while. I deserve to share it with people because it is very, very lucky.
In airports, correct? In airports.
Anything. You know what? We do have, is there any doubt that we have things that are a little more difficult in our life? Sure, because we travel a lot and we do a bunch of things on the road, and sports very often comes up on weekends when most of your family and social obligations are. But if that's what we have to give back for what we get to do, we're very, very lucky because we cover sports, we travel, we see America, we get to meet wonderful people, and it is a very lucky life. There's no doubt about that, Jack.
I love listening to you, and I'm regularly amazed at your recall, your facts, your history. You're a real student of your craft. You're a young Ernie Harwell.
Oh gosh, please don't destroy Mr. Harwell's name by saying that. I appreciate the compliment. That man's the best. That man is just great. He is he's a one of a kind. There are a lot. One thing I do proudly admit is that I am a student of my craft, and that means the people who do it. I love watching games and hearing people who do it the right way, and they don't call much attention to themselves. And It's all about the people who are playing or what they've learned. Now, our business has changed a little bit, Jack, that I think we're asked for an opinion a little bit more than we used to be. You could be Ernie Harwell, the voice of the Tigers, and you really wouldn't be criticized for saying that the Tigers were awful and their pitching, their middle relief is terrible. But with sports talk radio and the internet and sports blogs, and it's just growth and progress. There just come other hurdles, and one of them is sportscasters now asked to be more critical of the home team, who very often employs them. So it's become a different world. But I do admire the world of the Vin Scullys, the Ernie Harwells, because at the end of the day, they tell stories. And sports is about stories to me. Who wins and loses a game is in front of us, and that's on the scoreboard. But if you can tell me about the people playing, then I might care a little bit longer. And that is the one thing. You know, Ernie Harwell would have a story after a story after a story on somebody involved in sports. And I love that. And that's the kind of thing I wish we could do more of. And I hope that we can still do some of within our broadcast to make you care about the people you're watching.
You're very humble. You're very classy. And many people think today you can't be successful being humble and classy. Talk about how you've done it.
Oh, you know, like I said before, I just think we do a job and people get to see it. And we just get a good seat for sporting events and people are jealous of that and see the glamorous part of our lives. And thus our, quote, fame, unquote, rises a little bit. I think there are about 100 people who do this just as well as I do. I think there's some great people who do this. I think Joe Buck at Fox is tremendous. I stop anytime I hear Bob Costas doing a game. Just in the NBA playoffs now, really, when we get down to this second round of the playoffs and beyond, the four people announcing the games on TV are Marv Albert and Kevin Harlan on TNT and myself and Mike Breen on ESPN. I think all three of those guys are great. I really do. They all call a lot more basketball than I do, and I think they're terrific. And I really admire them. And I think, well, boy, do I really belong doing games on the same level with these guys? So I just really, truly believe that. I think when you believe something, it comes across naturally. You can only fake things for so long. And I really believe in the other people who do this and hold them in very, very high regard. And if that keeps me humble, that's fine. Whether it's fear or the reality that there are other people who are very, very good and better than me at doing this, then so be it. Just the way I'm wired, I guess.
When we come back, we'll ask Mike Tirico what sports has taught him about life. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
We're talking to the voice of sports we love to listen to, Mike Tirico. Mike, what has sports taught you about life?
Wow, that's a big question there, Jack. I think in many regards, to borrow your line, that anything is possible. You know, you look at what happened with the Tigers here. Look at what has happened over the years with a variety of teams that you thought had no chance of ever winning, and they win. You do see, I think, more than anything else, at least to me, what teamwork is all about in sports. And I think that carries over to society and to our lives on an everyday basis. I believe that a strong team is a lot better than a star individual. And I think that when you surround yourself with very good, very intelligent people who can, in some ways, constantly educate you and push you to maximize your ability, then you really get the most out of the surroundings and the most out of the experience. And I look at teams, for example, now the Boston Celtics, who had the best regular season in the NBA. Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen were all all-star talents. Well, they came together this year through a couple of trades, and what they did during the regular season in winning 66 games, simply put, they put aside their individual stats. They all shot the ball less and scored less this year than they ever did. Yet they are having more success as a team than they ever did, as any team that they were on, any of the three guys. They've been to the playoffs. They've been to the conference finals, never to the NBA finals. But the group together accomplished more than they ever have as individuals because they put aside their own personal statistical line for the good of the team, for the big stat to win. And I think you see more and more that understanding your role, understanding your place, and contributing to the betterment of your group and your team probably teaches us life lessons that I wish, to be honest, that I was better at. I wish you understood a little bit better that the team and the team you're surrounded with is the thing that can make a difference, not just in your life, but in a lot of lives. I've seen it, Jack, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of the charitable things. You see, the Jim Valvano Foundation for Cancer Research, ESPN started back 11 years ago, the Jimmy V Foundation. And it has a lot of us involved, a lot of us who became friends with Jim Valvano, a lot of us who've been at ESPN for a very long time. And you see that through sports and through friendship and through a lot of people working together, we've been able to do a better job in raising money for cancer research than somebody just trying to do it individually. So if I've learned anything from sports, it is that truly anything is possible if you work hard and you're prepared and you get yourself set, but also the value of a team over the individual.
If you would, one or two great stories about Tiger.
You know, a lot of people, Jack, are getting on Tiger, and I don't blame them for the way he acts on the golf course. For whatever reason, maybe it's the proximity to golf, it's the manners of golf, people are much more tolerant of your star athlete getting upset and saying an R-rated word when they're on a football field or on a baseball diamond or perhaps basketball. But in golf, that's not acceptable. And I don't disagree with him. I think golf has a more gentlemanly quality, and the personalities are right in front of you, and you know microphones are there. And I think Tiger needs to be better about that going forward. Having said that, the good things with Tiger, my goodness. I enjoyed my time around Tiger. We through American Express, we did a couple of conversations at big golf tournaments where on Saturday night, Tiger and I would sit down in two big old comfortable chairs in front of 500 folks who were Amex's best clients. And we would sit and we'd talk about Tiger's life and how Tiger got there and tell stories about golf. Well, in that time, I got to spend time behind the stage with Tiger preparing for the event. And I really got to appreciate what a good person he is. Good guy, caring, very, very, very smart, somewhat worldly. Personality, you know, he wants to be the guy in the locker room who everybody loves. He can't be because he's the best in the world, and it's an individual game. But he is the quickest one with the needle. He's the quickest one to give you grief over something. Also, the first one to say, how's your family? How are your kids? A very strong-willed individual who is a lot nicer than most of the people around him get to know because he has to be guarded. And because everybody wants just 5 minutes of his time. I would say that's the number one thing. And the number two thing I enjoyed, we did a story with him, watching him hit golf balls on command for his practice, because he's so good. And wouldn't this be great for all of us to do? Tiger will look back and say, where do you want me to hit this ball? So what do you mean? Well, there's the range. Pick a flag on the right. I said, okay, how about that one 125 yards out? All right, and then pick one to the left of that one. All right, that one 175 yards out. So I say, okay, I'm going to hit a hook that will go around the right flag, make about a 90-degree turn as it hooks, and go wrap around in front of the left flag. I'm like, no way, no, come on. And they'll say, what club do you want me to do it with? And then you say a driver. It's okay, we'll pick a club I can really do it with. Okay, a 4-iron, a 6-iron, a 8-iron, and he'll do it. He has the most amazing skill I've ever seen for putting that little face of the club on that little golf ball and getting it to go in the direction he wants to. I've never seen any, even the other pros who I've seen hit trick shots, I've never seen them do the things he does.
One or two stories about Jordan, if you would, Mike Tirico.
Michael Jordan is a big sports fan. Michael, we ran into Michael at the Ryder Cup in Brookline, Massachusetts. About a decade ago, the one the U.S. famously came back on Sunday, Justin Leonard's famous putt. Jordan was out there as a fan. He is probably the most intense golfer you would ever see. He so desperately wants to be great at golf. Wagers heavily when he plays golf. The competitive nature of him comes out. I found that that of all the sports I covered, Jack, people want to be golfers more than they want to be anything else. Yeah, actors want to be athletes, and athletes want to be golfers. It's just remarkable. So many of the good athletes do, and Jordan's will to do it and his desire to do it is just one of a kind. You know, also watching Michael during the NBA Finals, when they beat Seattle for one of their six championships, it was the second time around for Michael. It was in 1996. It was the same day that that Steve Jones won the U.S. Open at Oakland Hills when Tom Lehman drove it into a bunker on 18. We were in Chicago that day for game six of the finals, and the Bulls won the first three games, then lost games four and five, and now you were starting to ask questions, are the Bulls getting old? Does Jordan still have it? And the inner peace and calm that Jordan gave me, he kind of just felt it from him as he met with the media those couple of days, but the focus, I was downstairs in the United Center as Michael walked into the arena, and the focus in his eyes as he came through was the most intense focus on an athlete I've ever seen, and he really carried his team. He didn't have like a 50-point game, but he carried his team through to that championship and another after that. So I'll never forget being around Jordan. I remember obviously the specifics of what I watched that afternoon on TV. I'll never forget being around Jordan one of those championship days and seeing that those guys do have a focus that is not only commendable, it's otherworldly at times.
Mike, what common traits do the greatest athletes have in common?
The money doesn't define them. That used to not be the case 20, 30 years ago. But now, they're not about the money. And there's a ton of money to be out there for. They all have that insatiable appetite for getting better. Why does Tiger Woods get up in the morning and go hit golf balls? I mean, think about it, Jack. He has everything. He owns homes. He owns golf courses now. He's starting to develop golf courses. He has wonderful business outreach. He's the best. You know, he can retire right now and be the second best golfer of the modern era. I don't think we can compare Bobby Jones and Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. The world has changed too much. But if you go the modern era from World War II on, Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus will go down as the two best golfers. What wakes him up every day to be number one? And not number two, to catch Jack's title of 18 professional majors. There's something in him. There's some chip in him that does not allow him to hit the snooze bar. And he gets up every morning and goes out and wants to do it. Why is Tom Brady just incredibly disappointed after losing a Super Bowl for the first time? Because he wanted to be the first guy to reach that next plateau. They have it all. They're set for life. Yet they still come out and want to do it. I think the elite athletes certainly go there. Now, the guys who are grinding and trying to succeed, I almost have more admiration for them because obviously they don't have the God-given talent, the physical ability to do what the others do, the elite guys do. But they answer the bell every day in hopes that they can max themselves out and become better and become the most they can be in that very short window. You know, Jack, just one quick point. You look at an athlete's career, it's pretty short. The average career in football is 4 to 5 years. So those 4 to 5 years define that you've worked most of your life to become that. You have reached the highest point of that. And let's even take a great career. That's a 10-year career. Really, only 10 of your hopefully 70, 80, 90 years on this earth, maybe 100, will be doing that thing. Yet it will define you forever. Oh, you played football. Oh, you were a great football player for 10 years. You were an all-pro. So it's such a short window for these people to hit the high, and then they have to know that their body tells them it's time to start coming down. And what I admire the most about the people in every sport, Woods in golf, Brady and Manning, you go all the way around. What I admire the most about all those guys is that they wake up every day wanting to be better and wanting to win the next game. And I take that away more than anything else.
We're talking to Mike Tirico, and I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Mike Tirico, the play-by-play announcer for ESPN's presentation of Monday Night Football. You talked about your mom at the start. When she goes to church, when she talks to her friends, you know, and how's your Mikey doing? Well, yesterday he presented the Super Bowl trophy to Mr. Rooney of the Steelers, or he presented the NBA championship trophy, or he's doing the game between the Patriots and the Colts. This fairy tale life, do you ever pinch yourself?
I should more. I don't, to be honest. George Karl is the coach of the Denver Nuggets, Jack, and George and I were lucky enough to work together for 2 years, 2 years ago. And I just had him on my radio show on, I guess it was last Monday, two Fridays ago. And I asked George what's different, because Carmelo Anthony, great player for him, went to Syracuse, led Syracuse to a national championship, was arrested for DUI, driving under the influence of alcohol. And he talked about the communication with players. It's all different. Coaching has changed in his 25 years. And he said, you know, sometimes winning is just a bridge from one misery to the next. And it really got me thinking how sad that is. And at times it feels the same way for us. You know, you work very hard for a game. The game's over 2.5 hours. And immediately you start thinking about the next airplane, the next game, the next thing. And you don't really enjoy what you've done or how you're doing it. And you don't stop enough to appreciate it. I think that's that. If I could self-scout myself, I wish I could stop and step back and take an appreciation for what I've done. Because I wrote one of those things, and teachers, if you do this with your kids, I hope people still do it and keep doing it. I wrote something that said, forecast where you're going to be. I must have been 1999, and it must have been 1979 when I did it, because I was in grade school or middle school. As where will you be in 1999? I said, I'll be married and living on Long Island in New York, which is not too far from where I grew up, and I'd be an announcer for the New York Rangers. And that would be my dream job. Hmm. Well, I kind of passed that job level three or four times over in many regards. And, you know, you don't stop. You rarely do you stop to look at the top of the mountain and say, okay, I climbed the mountain, and now I got to go back down it. So I wish I could stop and enjoy it a little bit more, and I probably need to, and maybe talking about it here and the people around me can help me do that.
Talking about radio, you have a daily show on ESPN. What's the difference between radio and TV?
I think the radio interview is an easier one to do because somebody is not looking at a camera. And I think they are more, they're disarmed a bit, they're more loose, they are more ready to give you a story or a tale. Radio, as you know, is so conversational and fun. I think there was a Freudian slip. Radio has also become controversial. Give me a big spark. Give me a strong opinion. And there aren't many shows like this where you can actually do nice, intelligent conversation and some in-depth stuff. And to me, that's a little bit disappointing. I despise almost what sports radio has become. It's embarrassing in a lot of ways because there's venom and anger and this guy stinks. And you get it from a lot of people who don't go to see coaches or locker rooms. I hear people talking about NBA teams, and I know they've never sat and talked to their coach, and they've never been there. And I just laugh at that sometimes. So I wish that medium could go back a little bit to what it was for many years. It was some forms entertainment, but in many, many forms it was enjoyment, relaxation, and educational. And I don't think it's what it used to be. But I love doing the radio show because of the conversation piece.
You just shared with us the Masters a few weeks ago. How do you explain, Mike Tirico, the aura, the majesty of the Masters?
I don't think I've ever been to a more beautiful golf course. It is immaculate. It's spectacular. I think because of its time, look, there are a lot of spectacular golf courses. The fact that a very important tournament is played there at the same time every year, when those of us in the northern half of the country are just ready to get outside and see a flower and feel warmth from the sun, I think that contributes to it. It's just a beautiful place. And I tell everybody, when you walk through the gates there, you can't help but smile. It just puts a smile on your face. And I really enjoy my time at Augusta National. And I hope if you ever have an opportunity, those of you who are listening, you get a chance to go there. Because there are five different Augusta experiences. It's watching it on standard definition TV, watching it on high definition TV, walking the golf course during the tournament, and then playing the golf course. And when you go through all those experiences, you find it's more beautiful each time.
For a listener tonight who has big dreams, talk about having the courage to dream big dreams.
I think I think living big dreams has so much to do with the people around you. I'm always a big plan B person. Probably a more of a glass half empty at times person. But I tell people all the time now who want to get into TV and sports TV, a lot of kids at Syracuse where I went to school, a lot of those students have the same dreams that I had 20 years ago, 20 plus years ago. And I always tell them, you know, be ready to go run a political campaign, which was in the back of my mind in my political science major that you mentioned when our conversation began. I thought I'd be running somebody's campaign as a media director or something like that. I like to keep that in mind. So always have a second plan, but then go chase your dream. Don't let anybody tell you that you can't until you've tried and you couldn't. That's the one thing that I feel like the people around me have inspired me to do.
Last question, Mike Tirico. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Be prepared. Be over-prepared. Be more prepared than the person who has the job. Do have that dream. Focus on that dream. Really explore during your youth the things that you really like to do, and then identify it and go after it, because our world is so much more competitive now. The earlier we can identify it, I think the better chance we have. And trust the people around you, your parents, the people who are close to you at school. Trust those people to help you funnel your dream and help you expand as a person. I think those would be the things. And most important is to have fun. The process is long and hard, and a lot of people tell you, no, just have fun.
Mike Tirico, thanks for doing this. Thanks. You give millions of people fun experiences every night.
Well, it's a wonderful job. It's fun to do, and it's really nice sharing time with you, Jack. Continued success for trusting us and everything you do. I really enjoy your show whenever I get a chance to listen to it. I think it's what radio's all about, just two people talking and learning more. I've learned a lot about a lot of people, so keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Our guest next Sunday will be a house painter who became a professional singer at age 43, Mark Randese. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahome.